Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. Did you know that for only $27 per month, you can now gain unlimited access to more than $2,000 worth of resources, courses, and video archives, all built to help you build a better business, be a better leader, and live a happier life as a small firm architect? And we're adding more every month. Learn more about Entree Architect Academy at entrearchitect.com. You're listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 175. Welcome back to the Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. I'm back with another episode from our podcast series called The Entrepreneur Architect, where I interview you, members of the Entree Architect community. I want to know your story. I want to give you an opportunity to share some of your knowledge. You have a story. We all have a story about how we were inspired to pursue a career in this profession, a story about the people who influenced us to get to this place in our lives, the story about how we became entrepreneur architects. So I want to hear your story. Email me at podcast@entrearchitect.com and let me know that you want to be part of this series. This week at the Entree Architect Podcast, I'm speaking with Michael Kilkelly, entrepreneur architect. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, FreshBooks, NCARB, BQE Software, and RCAT. And I'm going to share more about these great companies and organizations later in the show, but as we get started here, just take a quick note to schedule some time this week to go visit each one of them and let them know that their support is appreciated by us, the Entree Architect community. Michael Kilkelly, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hey, Mark, it's great to be here.
It's great having you here. Michael is a principal at Space Command, a architecture and consulting firm in Middletown, Connecticut. He's also the founder of Arc Smarter, ARCHSmarter.com, a website dedicated to helping architects and designers work smarter, not harder. I'd love to get into that a little bit. It's a cool place to go visit. So if you haven't been there, go check it out at ARCHSmarter.com. Michael has also received his Bachelor of Architecture from Norwich University and a Master's of Science in Design and Computation from MIT. Previously, Michael was an associate at Gary Partners in LA, in Los Angeles, California, where he worked on several high-profile design projects, including New York by Gary, and the Guggenheim Abu Dhabi, some pretty cool projects that must have been fun. Michael writes regularly about design and technology at Arc Smarter, Arc Daily, and at Architect Magazine, so you may recognize his name if you frequent any of those places. So, Michael, let's get into this a little bit. I shared a little bit about you. I want to start just like I always start this show here with your origin story. Take a minute or two and go back to where you discovered architecture, what inspired you to become an architect, and give us your story. We'll go from there.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. So I think, you know, I got into architecture probably from, you know, like a lot of people do. I loved playing with Legos as a kid. I liked to draw. I had a hunch that architecture was kind of the profession for me, but I didn't know any architects. I didn't know, other than like the Brady Bunch or anything like that, I didn't really know what an architect did, on a daily basis. So other than going to the library and taking a drafting class in high school, I didn't have much exposure to the profession. But again, I felt like, you know, I had a good left brain, right brain kind of combination, that doing the technical and the creative, which is what I imagined architects did, that would be, you know, a good career path for me. And, you know, fortunately, that's been the case. But it wasn't until I got into, you know, to architecture school. I did my bachelor's at Norwich University in Vermont. And, you know, then I realized, oh, okay, like this is, all right, we're in it. This is it. This did not what I totally expected, though I didn't really know, again, what to expect. So I did, you know, a five-year Bachelor of Architecture at Norwich. And that's when I started. This was in the early 90s. I was there from 90 to 95. Computers were just starting to get introduced. We did a lot of hand drafting. We built a lot of physical models. And we had a computer class, you know, and so that was it. I kept doing hand drawings, and came to my, you know, my fifth year thesis. Again, I was really interested in technology, but it was pretty primitive back then. You know, we were still using DOS for the most part. And my thesis project was, you know, I produced, it was set at Burning Man out in Nevada desert. So, it was this little kind of small project, but I was doing, again, making physical models, hand drawing, and then I had started getting into rendering and animation using 3D Studio, which was still fairly new at that point. So it was kind of this mix of media between handmade and digital. So it was really fun doing that. Now, after I graduated, I worked for a firm here in Connecticut for a couple of years. And again, I've always throughout my career had this interest in design and technology, and I've been, I think, throughout trying to figure out how to do both of them in some way, shape, or form. So I was, you know, working as an intern architect, and again, doing a lot of rendering, still interested, exploring computers. And at that point, I wanted to go back to school. I knew I wanted to go back, and I went to MIT, and it's a Master of Science in Architecture Studies, and then focused in design and computation. And that was just a great experience.
What does that mean, design and computation?
So it's a very wide kind of program at MIT. So it's really up to you to define what that means. So I was taking, you can take courses, you know, through any department. You can take courses at Harvard. So I was doing design studios. I was taking music classes. And the only requirement really is to do a thesis at the end. So, you know, you can go as far afield as you want. You just have to kind of bring it back home and do your thesis. And so you could really explore things. And that was as rapid prototyping was kind of starting to become more and more prevalent. And I was there from 97 to 99. What I was interested in, though, was looking at, you know, how we as architects could do our work more efficiently, be more effective. And so, you know, my kind of research was really into like construction drawings and how we actually go through and create them and look at alternate ways that we could develop documentation and tools that would support that. So after MIT, I worked in the Boston area for a few firms. I was working for Martha Schwartz, who was a landscape architect, and so doing design work, but also taking care of their computers and those sorts of things. Then I worked for a internet startup. So this was around, you know, internet 1.0, and that was great. So they were developing project management software for construction projects, basically. And so as with most companies around that time, you know, it was we had a year run and then things faded out. So then I worked for another kind of medium-sized firm, Ad Inc., in the Boston area.
I have some friends there.
Yes, that's right. Yep. And so around that time, you know, I had been interested in moving out of the Boston. Like, I grew up in New England. I'd lived there pretty much all my life. I wanted to go kind of go somewhere else. And an opportunity came up at Frank Gehry's firm. So they were looking for, again, somebody with architectural experience, but was willing to, you know, also had technical experience and wanted to work on projects, but have more of a kind of technical administration role, like, so manage a lot of their drawing sets, be able to automate, you know, optimize the workflows, essentially. So, you know, again, I've always gone back and forth between the technical and design sides. So for me, you know, this was the perfect opportunity. So here I could do both things, work on projects, but also at a scale and a complexity that would be pretty interesting. So 2005, you know, my wife and I moved out to LA, and I was there at Gehry's firm for 7 years to 2012. We had, you know, two of our kids were born out in LA, and they're still hardcore Dodgers fans. I can't get them to root for the Red Sox as much as I try. So around that, again, we had two kids. All of our family was all back east, so we wanted to move back at some point. And so my wife got an opportunity, teaching opportunity here in Connecticut. So that seemed like a good way to kind of make our way back to New England. And I, around that time too, I'd been thinking, you know, that I did want to go out on my own. I wanted to kind of start my firm. You know, I survived through the recession in 2008 and 2009, but I saw a lot of, you know, really talented people who, you know, had been with the firm for a long time, you know, and they got laid off. There just wasn't enough work. And Gehry's firm at that point, you know, we were up to 200 people at one point, and then we shrunk down to 100. And so, you know, and I think those of us who survived through that a lot, you know, have similar stories of just how kind of work dried up all of a sudden. So seeing that, I realized, like, having a full-time job isn't always the most secure approach. Again, it was people who had spent their whole career at the firm, and it just was through circumstance. They were let go, and then they had to go find something else. So that was really difficult to kind of live through and see it, but it made me think about, well, what do I want to do, you know, for my career after this? And I became a lot more interested in business and, you know, started reading up, you know, all with the intent of at some point starting my own company, be it either an architecture firm or kind of consulting company or something else altogether. So this, again, when my wife got the job and we moved to Connecticut, that seemed like a perfect opportunity to start afresh, start on my own.
Were you licensed at that time when you came back?
I was, yes.
Where along the timeline did you get licensed?
So that's a great story. I started IDP when I finished up, when I graduated from college. So I got 2 years of IDP done. And then I went back to school and sort of got off the rails. So it wasn't until I started working actually at Gehry's firm. Mm-hmm. And it was when I kind of finished up all my IDP paperwork. And then I started taking my exams right after my first son was born in 2006. And then finished them in, I think, before my second son was born, 2009. So I was around, you know, 36 years old. So it was a long process.
Yeah.
I think I needed that, the time constraint of having kids, to make me sit down and do it. Because I don't know what I was doing with my time, you know, before kids. I had all the time in the world.
Exactly.
But just didn't actually sit down and get it done.
It's amazing how much you can get done when you focus because you have other priorities.
Exactly. And I think that was it. I needed that pressure, especially too. I had, you know, my kid number two come in. Like, I had to get it done. There was no question about it.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I did come back, back east, I was licensed already.
So you came back east and you decided this was a good time to start your own thing.
Right. Yeah. So when I left Gary's office, I had a really good relationship with them, and I approached them about potentially doing some consulting for them, you know, and working remotely. And that seemed like a good kind of a good bridge into, you know, working for myself. So I would have to manage them, you know, they would be a client, not an employer. And again, be able to work with them remotely, handle them, you know, but I already knew the work that they were doing. I knew, you know, what my role would be. So that's actually been great. So that's been consistent in, you know, in the 5 years since I've left, I've been doing consulting work for them. And I, you know, I go out there about once a month, and, you know, still have a very good relationship with
them. And they don't have any East Coast base, right?
Correct. Yeah. They're just their office. There's one office that's in LA. And that's it. There's about, you know, about a little over 100 people there still. And they no plans, obviously, to open up any other offices.
And is that the bulk of your work?
It varies. I think initially it was. And again, having one client isn't really sustainable. So I've been working on developing other consulting projects and clients as well. And then also building out ArcSmarter as its own kind of sustainable business. And then also kind of as a third thing, getting some local architectural projects here in kind of the central Connecticut area. So there's sort of a mix of different project types, client types, and sort of business models thrown in there.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story. And you can see the progression that you had. Obviously, this interest in technology and architecture, and that thread runs through your whole story, and you've landed in some pretty prestigious places doing some prestigious work, so you've must have had goals set for that. Is there a specific goal that you can share with us that sort of you had this goal, you achieved it, and the process that you followed to achieve that goal?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, apart from becoming licensed, that was always the big goal. But I had always wanted to start my own firm, and that I didn't really know what that was going to look like. So, you know, I come from a sort of working class family in the suburbs of Boston. You know, my dad was a machinist, and so he was always kind of, you know, putting the work in. And I remember thinking as a kid, like, he should open his own machine shop. Why doesn't he do that? you know, and now I know, like, oh yeah, it's really hard. Yeah, like, that takes a lot of work. But that seemed to be, you know, a way to that you're building something of your own apart from, you know, the work you're doing, but you're building an organization, a culture, and so forth. So for me, you know, that had always been a goal somewhere kind of in the back of my mind. So finally being able to do it, and, you know, now 5 years out, it's still a work in progress. Like, I think of my business in particular, it's kind of like a design project, and I'm sort of in the schematic phase, but I'm hoping to be moving into DD pretty soon. But that has been, you know, a big accomplishment, you know, just getting this far.
Do you have it all planned, or did you take the jump and then sort of just go as you proceed?
Yeah, it's not planned. Yeah. I think was it with writers? There's people who, pantsers or plotters. So you either do it by the seat of your pants, or you plot it out step by step. So I'm a pantser as far as the business goes. That's something I know that I need to work on and get some more structure and planning kind of into it, because again, I've been doing this kind of on my own for 5 years, but I feel like it's hard to do a lot of different things. Like, I need to focus to get some efficiencies and systems in place, so that I can, you know, grow the business and continue to make it sustainable.
Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entre Architect: Arcat, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software. You already know all about ARCAD and their free BIM objects and their CAD details and their specifications and product information, all free, ready for you to use. Well, today I want to share something new from ARCAD. It's called Charette. Charette is a tool for sharing and collaborating with your colleagues and clients online in real time. You can upload photos and files, share specs and product information directly from the RCAT database, as well as from other sources on the internet. I've been playing with Charette in beta for a while now, and it's really cool. And now it's available to you. I encourage you to go check it out. Visit RCAT online and click the Charette icon right there on the homepage. And like everything offered at RCAT, Charette is a free tool for us small firm architects too. Learn more at entrearchitect.com/RCAT. 192 hours. You wish you had that much free time? That works out to about 2 business days every month. And when you're a small firm architect using FreshBooks cloud accounting software, that's the amount of administration time that you could save in 2017. That's time that you can spend doing the things you love, like being an architect. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Sign up for a free 30-day unrestricted trial and get ready for the simplest way to be more productive, organized, and most importantly, get paid faster. Visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access FreshBooks for free. And be sure to enter Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Do you know someone in your firm who's always dreamed of getting licensed, but was unable to complete the experience requirements? Well, maybe that person's you. Now you can get back on track with NCARB's new AXP portfolio. With this option, seasoned professionals can complete the Architectural Experience Program, the AXP, formerly known as the IDP, by submitting an online portfolio. Along with meeting your state's education and examination requirements, the portfolio will help you and your employees get one step closer to becoming a licensed architect. Learn more about NCARB's AXP portfolio at entrearchitect.com/NCARB. One of the most often requested resources here at Entree Architect is project management software. How do we keep our projects and our people organized while we grow as entrepreneur architects? BQE Software, an AIA Advantage partner, and the makers of ArchiOffice will show us how. ArchiOffice is the only office and project management software designed specifically for architects. It will help us manage people and projects and allow us to focus on designing great architecture. Whether you're working remotely or on site, ArchiOffice allows you to monitor the status of your projects and tasks and send out invoices in an accurate and timely manner. Entree Architect podcast listeners can get a fully functional 15-day trial of ArchiOffice today at entrearchitect.com/BQE. RCAT, FreshBooks, NCARB, and BQE Software, please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So Arc Smarter is all about working smarter, not harder. And we haven't really gotten into what that is yet. So we'll talk about that in a little while. But was that sort of the inspiration to start Arc Smarter? Knowing that that's something that you need to do as well, why not build a platform around it while you're learning?
It is, yeah. And so, I mean, actually, the genesis of Arc Smarter, a lot of that came out of working at Frank Gehry's office. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was working on a big project. I was putting in a lot of time, you know, like 60, 70-hour weeks, working weekends. And again, I had a small child at home, you know, my wife who was also working. And it got to a point where, you know, I was working. We had a deadline coming up. I think we had a DD deadline. Again, my role kind of as the computer person, the technical person on the project, I had to do a lot of the cleanup and, you know, we would finish up drawings. And this is kind of a little known secret, but, you know, at Gehry's office, they use CATIA for a lot of the 3D work, but they also use a whole lot of AutoCAD. And so my job, you know, they were producing a massive set of drawings. I had to, you know, take all the PDFs, package them up, get all the AutoCAD drawings ready to be shipped out. And it was just taking an enormous amount of time. And we'd finish our deadline up at like 6 on Friday, and then I'd be spending, you know, 7 or 8 hours after that just kind of doing the cleanup. And, you know, I realized, again, I'm getting home at 3 a.m, my eyes are red. You know, my wife is waking up looking at me like, you know, you're a mess. Yeah. You got to figure out some, you know, some way to do this.
And so two little babies.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just needed to figure out a better way to get this work done. Like the work wasn't going to change, but I needed to, again, I needed to approach it a lot smarter. And so I started looking at, you know, ways that I could automate a lot of that, the tedious stuff that I needed to do, you know, where I was just sitting there clicking a mouse because I didn't have a better way to do it. And so I started, you know, learning how to program and looking at, you know, more efficient workflows and, you know, breaking things down kind of step by step and then trying to make small gradual improvements over this one particular workflow. And so after doing that for a few weeks, you know, this process that would take me 8 hours, I got it down to like 1 hour. And then since I was able to outline it, you know, I could hand it off to somebody else and say, do this, run this script, do that. So I could remove myself out of that process. And I found that for me, you know, that was liberating because I could save, you know, that was my time that I was getting back. But also I became the person in the office who could make other people more efficient by, you know, by developing these workflows, writing these scripts, doing, you know, thinking about things from an effectiveness point of view. And so, you know, when the recession did come, you know, I was largely, you know, safe because, again, I brought a lot of value to the firm in terms of the work I could do, but also how I could help other people do their work. And so, you know, when it was time to leave, I really wanted to kind of, you know, build a platform for talking about, like, working more efficiently, working smarter in, you know, for architects and engineers. Again, because when we're in school, time, you know, we're not really taught about how to value your time. You know, the studio culture, at least when I was in school, was, you know, pulling all-nighters, like working constantly. There was no discussion of work-life balance or anything like that. So I think we come from that culture where you can just throw as much time, you know, as you have at a project. Let's just do that. That's the way you make, you know, good architecture. So ArcSmarter came out of, kind of in reaction to that in a lot of ways. So we can look at, you know, how we work, how we do things, but approach it a different way so that we can maintain that work-life balance. We're not always, you know, working weekends and late nights, you know. And again, it was a lot of it was for me. I wanted to get home and have dinner with my family. So ArcSmarter became a way to kind of do that learning, you know, out loud in public and just start that discussion a little bit more.
So are you delivering that information as training or tools or both?
Both, actually. So it started, ArcSmart started as a blog. So I just started writing about these particular issues, you know, with a bent towards technology. And then I released a course on about like writing, you know, programming Revit. So writing Revit macros. And then I developed some Revit specific plugins and then added some more courses to it. So it's evolved, you know. I started by building an audience and then kind of seeing what the audience wanted, more or less.
Yeah, very interesting. Was there, you know, either at ArcSmarter or as you're starting your own firm or moving out to work for Gary, was there a specific aha moment in your life that you said, oh, this is a game changer? So can you talk about that and how that aha moment, you capitalized it on it and turned it into something that changed your life?
Yeah, I think, you know, starting like with my frustrations working at Gary's office, and again, just the time, a lot of times the inefficiency, developing, you know, a way based, you know, came down to like learning how to program, getting under the hood of the software, being able to use it more effectively. That was one aha moment where I said, oh, okay, this, you know, there's something to this, and seeing how that kind of impacted my career at that office. But I think once I started ArcSmarter, started writing about those topics and then having, you know, feedback from people on the outside who, you know, were also frustrated and looking for solutions, again, to work smarter. They didn't want to be spending all that time at the office. You know, how can we do this? How can we be more effective? So I think it was sort of, it was a feedback loop, because I was, you know, I am my own audience in the sense that I'm a practicing architect. I'm looking for ways to work smarter. And hearing back from other people, like, okay, you know, I'm onto something here. This is, you know, worth pursuing. So it keeps coming back. And, you know, the more kind of the audience grows, the more feedback I get. It just makes me want to do, you know, more, look deeper, you know, figure stuff out more so.
Yeah, like you said before, it's so culturally built into us as architects to just keep working hard.
Right.
It doesn't even come to your senses that, well, maybe there's a way that we can work smarter, that we can create tools or create some sort of workflow, or even have the time to think about that or develop those workflows to get the work done, because we're always doing the work.
No, and that you're absolutely right, Mark. And I think that it's knowing that a discussion about how we're going to do the work is not, you know, time wasted, that if you can think about it objectively, look at it, it doesn't impact what the work is necessarily. Again, though, I think in school it's all, you know, the amount of time equals how great it is, you know, and that's not really the case. So you can take those two apart. But yeah, having that discussion, having that frame of mind about the process is really valuable.
Yeah, it's like taking the time to sharpen the saw.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or was it Abe Lincoln? Was it?
Yeah.
How long? He had 8 hours to cut down a tree.
Yeah.
Spent 6 hours sharpening his axe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's a lot easier to cut it down with a sharp saw.
Yes. Yep. Very true.
So what do you think makes you or your firm unique? What's one thing that makes you different than everybody else?
Within ArcSmarter, there's a lot of people who write about technology. There's a lot of people who, you know, develop training. You know, there's companies like lynda.com, and you have Pluralsight. I mean, I think for me, and again, I run ArcSmarter, you know, by myself. My, you know, zone of genius, if you will, is kind of taking complex subjects or workflows, breaking them down into like smaller manageable bites, and then using kind of humor and narrative like as a teaching tool. I like to write about technology, but from a humanistic point of view. So what does it mean for you, you know, as an architect, if you're going to use technology? It's not always about like the latest, you know, gizmo or gadget or anything like that, but how does it affect you and what impact does it, you know, have on your life? So I try to approach, you know, the work I do with ArcSmarter from that perspective.
Yeah, we should talk more because I would love to bring more of what you're doing to Entree Architects, because, you know, we do a lot of talking about those kind of things, and we're building, you know, systems and giving, you know, members in the academy resources like that. But, you know, we might be able to bring some of ArcSmarter's content and tools to the Entree Architect community.
Yeah, let's talk.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay.
So let's get into some quick questions.
Sure.
At what age did you decide to become an architect?
You know, I think I was probably like 12, 13, you know, at that. I did a report. We had like a science fair at school. I think it was seventh grade. And I did a report on, you know, being an architect. And I still have it. It's hilarious to read because it's written in hand, you know, in like a blue on lined paper. And I have all these drawings of, you know, people building a house. And it's really funny. And I think that, you know, that was when I started thinking kind of architecture, engineering, you know, as a potential career path. It took me a while to actually get registered, but I'd say right around that age.
Yeah, you should hang that up. You should frame that.
I know. I need to scan it. I have it somewhere in my garage.
Yeah,
I need to dig that out.
That'd
sure.
be very cool. I have some old drawings that are in my old bedroom in my parents' house that I could point at and say, "Yep, that was That's right around great. When I realized that I was going to be an architect. I started designing my house."
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. It starts at the house.
Yeah. It's a horrible looking house.
I know.
But the intent was there.
That's okay. It's a process.
So What's your target market today? Let's do both the firm and ArcSmarter.
So for ArcSmarter, it's really architects and engineers, you know, who are looking to want to work smarter, want to be more efficient, and that, you know, that's through either training, customization of software, or consulting. For my firm, I do, again, I'm a sole proprietor. I work by myself, so I'm doing residential and light commercial projects. So I really like residential projects because you're working, you know, one-on-one with the homeowners. And I think that comes from having worked in large firms where, you know, the client was, there was layers and layers of clients. So I really like the kind of small scale, the intimacy of doing residential projects.
When you're doing that type of work, are you working stipulated sum, hourly, or percentage-based fee?
I do stipulated sum. And so for, at least for the architecture projects, that's typically how I work. I actually use your hybrid proposal contract. So thank you for that. I really,
you're welcome.
It's been super helpful. And then, you know, for ArcSmarter, that varies between hourly, or it's kind of a product. There are, you know, products that I'm selling. So there's, you know, there's a little bit of mix of everything. Although I'm interested in looking at, you know, on the architecture side, you know, bringing in some of that kind of product mentality, like productized consulting, kind of into creating, you know, packages, design packages, if you will, just makes it a little bit easier to have the discussion, you know, with homeowners when you have there's a fixed price, as much as you can, you know, because there's so much variability. But it's interesting to see how those, you know, the businesses can kind of feed into each other a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Yep. I have that happen all the time with Five Cat Studio, my firm,
right,
and Entree Architect. I'm constantly taking things I learn at the firm and
exactly,
pushing them out through Entree Architect. And the same thing, you know, the things I learn with Entree Architect with the technology side and the internet side,
yeah,
bringing it
yep,
back to Five Cat. It's interesting how they feed one another.
And I think it's a good, I mean, I really like that because there's synergy between, even though they're different businesses and different, you know, different clients essentially. But again, yeah, you can pull back and forth. And that's one thing for the architecture side. I've been really getting projects through kind of word of mouth and referrals. I haven't yet kind of closed the loop and brought in some of the content marketing, you know, email marketing aspects that I use in ArcSmarter. So that's my goal for this year, is to start, you know, having kind of both sides of the business, you know, working at kind of a same level. And I do, again, for me, a lot of the stuff that I write about, you know, is things that I'm dealing with on a daily basis. So there's really good feedback between those sides. And I'm sure the same thing with you, Mark,
yeah,
as well, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. Other than architecture and ArcSmarter, what makes you happy? What sort of hobbies or passions do you have outside of architecture?
I mentioned, you know, I've got three kids now. So aside from, you know, spending time at home with my wife and kids, you know, they're really into soccer right now. So my oldest is 11. I've got a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old. So that keeps me busy probably 90% of the time. This spring has just been crazy with sports and stuff. But, you know, for me personally, anytime I can get outside. So I really like cycling. I'm a pretty avid cyclist. I haven't done it as much this spring, but I'm hoping to get out more this summer. And then I've been practicing yoga for a while, but this just starting this year, I've really been taking it a lot more seriously. So I get out, try to do 2 to 3 times a week. And I find, as I'm getting older, like my body's not getting any more limber. So at least like yoga helps me maintain some sort of stasis,
yeah,
so I don't completely fall apart.
Yeah.
And then I have a long list. I imagine like a lot of architects, I have a long list of projects around the house. So most of my work is digital, you know, but I like building stuff with my hands. So I have a workshop in my garage. I've built some furniture and, you know, I'm starting to scale that up. So I want to rebuild my porch. I've got a treehouse in the works, you know, so stuff that I can actually physically make, just as a way to get away from the screen. So any opportunity for that, I'm all for it.
What's the best advice you ever received?
You know, when I was finishing up my BArch thesis, you know, one of the reviewers was John Connell, who was a founder of the Yes Tomorrow Design Build School. Yeah. And he told me, he's like, look, you can practice architecture any way you want. Now, how you make a living is a whole nother story. And for some reason that piece of advice has really stuck with me, because I think, one, it illustrates, you know, the dichotomy that we have in school, where architecture isn't necessarily seen as a calling and not so much as a business. But also, too, like the encouragement, like, look, you can practice any way you want, but you have to make a living some way, shape, or form. And so I think trying to find, you know, the balance between and the tension between practicing and making a living. And I think that, again, that piece of advice has changed for me over the years. Now that I'm working on my own, it's like, okay, yeah, the making a living part is really important. And it's not as easy as you would think. So how can I fit, you know, practicing the way that I want into that and get them, you know, working together? And then, like, working at Frank Gehry's office, seeing clearly he was practicing the way he wants, and he's managed, you know, to make a pretty successful living. So there are certainly models out there.
Yeah. But he also is running a pretty decent business as well.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Because they feed one another. You know, you can have a great firm, you know, a practice, and it helps you build a better business. But when you start building a better business, it actually allows you to have more time and more resources and more money to actually be a better architect. And so.
Absolutely. Yeah. And being able to pick and choose, you know, what you want to do.
Yeah.
You know, not just taking whatever comes through the door.
Yeah. That's why I say profit first.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
One personal habit or daily routine that contributes to your success.
This is a tough one. So this sounds really kind of silly, but one thing that I do, like one of the first things I do every day, you know, is I make my bed. Like I get up and I make my bed. And I think, Stanley McChrystal has a book out now where he talks about, like, he gives advice, you know, for graduates. And like, that is one of his biggest pieces of advice. And I think the idea that, okay, I've done something today. And if that's all I do is make my bed, it's still a good day. So I try to, you know, it's gotten, I'm somewhat obsessive about it. Even like if I'm in a hotel, I'm making the bed. So it's just, that has really become a habit.
The housekeepers like you.
Oh,
a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a super, you know, favorite guest at any hotel. Yeah. The other thing, you know, I'm a pretty avid reader. So I'm reading, you know, every day. If it's even, I read a lot of fiction. I do a lot of nonfiction as well, but I'm always, you know, reading usually before bed. Which helps me get to sleep a lot of time, depending on what I'm reading. But that's something too. I always make sure that I have a book in some way, shape, or form with me.
As a technology guy, this is probably an easy one for you. Do you have a recommended app or an internet resource?
So yeah, the one app that I really like. So I'm doing a lot of writing, both, you know, for ArcSmarter and doing some freelance writing as well. But I found this app. It's called the Hemingway Editor. Have you heard of this, Mark?
I've heard of it, but I don't know it.
Yeah. So it basically will help you write, more like Ernest Hemingway. And so what it does is it highlights a lot of your own kind of idiosyncrasies as a writer. So it will go through and it pairs things down. Like if you're using a passive voice, it will identify, you know, is this sentence too complex? Are you using a passive voice? And it will kind of rank things and tell you, like, you've used it, you know, four passive voices, you should really shoot for three. But I found that it helps really clarify and, you know, what you're trying to say. So a lot of times I'll write something and then I'll paste it into the Hemingway editor and just see what it comes up. And then sometimes I take the suggestions and sometimes I don't. But that one's actually been, I thought, been really fun, just to see what, you know, what it thinks of what I wrote.
Yeah, I love that. I actually didn't know it. I thought I knew it, but when you described it, I didn't know it. The Hemingway app seems like it's something that's, is it working on artificial intelligence? Is it actually learning?
No, it doesn't learn.
Or
I think
it
has
programmed.
It's programmed, so it will go through and it looks at each sentence,
yeah,
and then it will evaluate them based on certain criteria. So it doesn't like learn your writing style necessarily.
Yeah.
But I think too, coming you coming from kind of from the architecture where writing isn't always seen as something that needs to be clear and illustrate a point. Hemingway is great for removing a lot of the jargon out of your writing, you know. So big words don't score well on Hemingway, you know, using archi-speak, if you will.
Yeah, I could see that it would be a great training tool, that it would actually make you a better writer.
Yeah,
because it would point out all the things that you don't realize you're doing.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you may think that is, again, and it's coming from, it has a bias, obviously, but it is, it makes your writing, I think, a lot more to the point and, you know, and effective, because it is easier to digest. And maybe, you know, we could argue whether or not all writing should be easy to digest, but certainly, you know, when you're writing, you know, for an audience, when you're writing, you know, for blogs, that helps you get your message out.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, writing about technical subjects, you know, the more accessible I can make it, certainly the better.
Yeah, I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah,
so
it's
you,
fun.
So you said that you read a lot. So do you have a recommended book?
Oh, yeah, I have a stack of them here, actually. there's a couple. I was going through my bookshelves trying to pick out some good ones. So there's one for business books. You know, when I first started – again, thinking about like, okay, I do want to, you know, open my own firm. I do want to start my own business. One book that I found to be really useful was The Personal MBA by Josh Kaufman.
Yeah.
And I started following his site before the book came out. And he would, you know, basically read all of the business books and write on them. But I think The Personal MBA is great because you can go through and it really breaks things down, all aspects of a business, he's not looking at a particular type of business, but business in general. So I think that's a great resource. Another book that I really liked that I read recently is called Badass: Making Users Awesome, and it's by Kathy Sierra, who's a programmer. And the book, you know, definitely has a software perspective, but I think there's a lot you can take from it, you know, for architects as well. And the idea is that, you know, you really, whatever you're doing, nobody cares about what you're doing. They care about how what you do can make them, you know, awesome. And so the book is a lot of fun to read because it's, there's a lot of pictures. I love pictures. So, but it's just really, really smart and clever. And I've marked it up like crazy. And then the other book, I actually, speaking of pictures, I really like, I'm going to kind of out myself as a geek here, but I really like comics and graphic novels. So I have a book, it's called Here by Richard McGuire. And it's a graphic novel where he looks at a particular site through all different times. So he'll, you know, what happens in this site, you know, a house is built in the 1920s, and then in particular rooms, different things are, it's actually really hard to describe, but if you see it, it makes perfect sense. And so he really just basically looks at this house through, you know, hundreds of years. And it's just, you know, it's a beautiful book. So
those are great, great recommendations. I'm going to have to put those on my list, but we'll also put them on the show notes. This is episode 175. So if anybody wants to go and get all these resources, it's entrearchitect.com/episode175. Michael, what is one thing that an entree architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think one of the best things you can start is producing content of some sort. And I think you hear this more and more, but that, you know, every company is a media company, whether they know it or not. So I think that, and like you did, Mark, you just either through blogs or through videos or whatever, just producing, you know, something useful that people can, you know, can consume in some way, shape, or form to help them do things better. I think as a foundation, you know, for building a business, you know, providing your usefulness, demonstrating it to an audience, like that's the best thing you can do. Because, you know, maybe you just don't know what will come out of that. But I've found since starting, you know, Arc Smarter as a blog, it has, you know, grown in ways that I wouldn't necessarily have anticipated. Opportunities have come that I wouldn't have anticipated, and certainly wouldn't have come along if I hadn't started writing, you know, regularly.
Yeah, and it's interesting also how you grow yourself by developing this, because you're sort of forced to learn things that you may not know about, which gives you more information to share. And it's sort of this cycle that the more you share, the more you grow, and the more you grow, the more you can share.
Exactly. And it feeds on itself.
Yeah.
But which isn't to say that it's easy, you know,
it's not easy. And you don't have to build an entire platform either, like you and I are doing. Mm-hmm. You could just start a blog and write, you know, just share your knowledge. Or, you know, I do guest posts. So anybody who wants to write a guest post for Entree Architect, if it's for our small firm architects and it's about business, leadership, or life, I'm interested. So you can write for us.
Yeah. Hey, I'll do it.
Send me one.
Okay. Sounds good.
How about a parting piece of guidance for other entrepreneur architects, and then we'll wrap things up with how people can connect with you.
You know, I think my one piece of guidance is just to, you know, be creative in your business. Like we are in a creative profession, but I think I certainly would encourage people to think creative about how they can, you know, be helpful and be of service. I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily, there's just a lot of opportunities out there. And I think that you can kind of express creativity in how you deliver your services and who you deliver your services to. So I would just encourage, you know, think creatively again in the business itself.
If our listeners wanted to connect with you online and wanted to say thank you or ask you some questions about what we talked about today, what's the best way to connect with you?
Sure. You can email me at michael@arcsmarter.com. If you go to ArcSmarter as well, you can sign up for my weekly newsletter. So I send out every Thursday, it's my Thursday top five. So I send out five links, either stuff I've written or stuff I found online that are of interest, you know, to architects, engineers, and having to do with technology, workflow, process, all that stuff.
Sounds good. I'm going to head over there myself and sign up for that.
Hey, all right.
I'm interested in what you're doing over there. So, Michael, thank you very much for joining me here today and for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
All right. Thank you, Mark. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. If you liked what Michael and I shared here today, complete show notes and a direct link to download this episode will be found at entrearchitect.com/episode175. And we'll have all the links there. Everything that we talked about will be there at entrearchitect.com/episode175. Go share that link with a friend. I want everybody to know what we're doing here at Entree Architect. And if you want to be a featured guest here at the Entree Architect Podcast as an entrepreneur architect, connect with us. Connect with us anywhere on social media. Reach out to me, Entree Architect, everywhere on the internet, or send us an email directly to podcast@entrearchitect.com and let us know you want to be on the show. And don't forget to visit the website to learn more about the Entree Architect Academy, our private online membership program built for you, small firm architects. That's you, small firm architect. You should check it out. Go to entrearchitect.com right there on the homepage. Learn all about it. You can build a better business. You can live a happier life. You can get more done. We can show you how. EntreeArchitect.com. My name, if you might not know, is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to focus and build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening today. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.